B-Pod Studios.
I'm on the line with us right now from Bleeding Green Nation. Michael Kist joins us. Michael, good morning, buddy.
How's it going, fellas? Everybody staying safe?
Everyone's so far so good for the time being. We're very fortunate to be able to say that. One thing I want to get into before, because we have been giving your site a lot of love this morning. It's added to a lot of fodder for the air. But one thing I want to get into here is the number one reason we reached out to you was to talk about this Eagles offseason and the acquisitions they made. Darius Slay, Javon Hargrave. And your site put out a story about Javon Hargrave and the impact he's supposed to have. First off, as a guy coming out of free agency, a lot of teams wanted him. When we talked to Adam Schefter, he said that he was the number two guy. After you saw a move like Byron Jones, the next guy off that list that he expected was Javon Hargrave. Howie Roseman even acknowledged, yeah, the number one priority was Byron Jones. That didn't happen, so they shifted immediately, pivoted, to use Howie Roseman's word, to Javon Hargrave. They got him. How much of an impact can we really expect from him in his first year, not just with the Eagles, but also in a 4-3 defense?
Yeah, I think there's a misnomer out there that Javon Hargrave is just a nose tackle, which comes with its own negative connotation that he's not a pass rusher. And then you worry about, you know, where he fits on this line being a 4-3 defense. Let me be clear. This is a nickel defense. They're in three linebacker sets only about 20% of the time. So I don't even really worry about that too much. Number two, Javon Hargrave played at nose tackle, played at one tech, played at three tech just as much as those other two positions. He's moved all around that defensive line for the Steelers. So we can put that aside. He's not going to, you know, lose his juice just for moving a half gap over. So we're fine there. Number three, how can he make an impact? Well, the biggest impact you can make as an interior defensive lineman, if you're paying him that big, it needs to come in the passing game. And this guy is third in the league last year for defensive tackles in pass rush productivity per PFF. They calculate that with pressures, quarterback hits, sacks, all that stuff. So this is a guy that is going to give you a big push on the interior. Now, how I think this helps is the Eagles didn't have that second guy. So now you have Malik Jackson, Fletcher Cox, and Javon Hargrave in the middle there. And Jim Schwartz, I think, will be less inclined to blitz. Last year, he blitzed a ton, a lot more than we're accustomed to. He was a top five blitzer bringing six plus men. So he brought the heat a ton. I think with this addition, with Malik and the guys they have on the edge and Fletcher Cox and all that, he can blitz less and it puts less pressure on the secondary where they got blitzed in coverage last year. So I think it's a solid move and I think it's going to have, you know, a ripple effect on the rest of the defense.
Mm-hmm. How much of an impact do you see him really with Malik Jackson and Fletcher Cox? But how much do you see, or what do you see the combination being on that defensive line? What do you think will be the norm for that defensive line, interior and, you know, the DNs as well?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a rotation where they keep guys fresh, which has worked for them before. You know, when Fletcher Cox had his best year in 2017, he was under 80% snaps. He's been higher than that recently. You want to keep that down. You want to keep Malik Jackson on a rotation where he's not having to be in there on a lot of rundowns. I think that's where Javon Hargrave fills in nicely. He's a three-down guy. Malik is better as a pass rusher than he is a run stuffer. So, you know, utilize their strengths and weaknesses and whatnot. I also think you're going to see more five-man surface from him, you know, more five-man lines, kind of like, you know, when the Bears have like Akeem Hicks, Eddie Goldman, and guys like that, and they bring in three interior defensive linemen. It's really stout up the middle, and it makes life easier on the linebackers behind them. So you get them all on the field by working them in a rotation and then just putting them all on the field at the same time because you've got three really good football players working along the line if you've got them all on the field.
Let's go to the defensive backfield a little bit. Now, the move with Jalen, they get rid of Malcolm Jenkins. They move Jalen Mills back to safety. How do you see them using Jalen Mills back there? Is it going to be just fill in and play the way Malcolm Jenkins did? Or is he maybe going to play, you know, share time with Will Parks? How do you see that safety spot being, used this year?
Let me tell you, I have no idea what they're going to do with their safeties, to be honest. I mean, I don't know what they're expecting for Jalen Mills. Everybody keeps saying the Malcolm Jenkins role, but I'm not sure that they realize just how much Malcolm Jenkins meant to that defense. I mean, you look at his like snaps per alignment. There are some games where he's in 17 to 18 different alignments. He has to know every spot where he's supposed to be, all the calls, where everybody around him is supposed to be. It's just not realistic to say that somebody's going to fill that role. Now, you can piecemeal it out. You can do situational stuff with Jalen Mills. You can do situational stuff with Will Parks. You know, Will Parks can play in the deep middle. He can play up towards the box. So Jatavius Brown is a linebacker that has safety experience as well. They have those linebacker-safety hybrids. They like it linebacker. But I think it really is going to be a struggle, and I don't think you're going to see them be able to utilize these guys the same way as a guy who's one of the smartest safeties in the league, one of the smartest safeties in the league ever in Malcolm Jenkins. You just can't replace that. So I think you will see some more vanilla stuff with them. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to see how they patchwork it together and how that snap share works out, how the matchups work out.
When you look at the defensive front, now I'll go back to the defense front, because to me, I think that now that you've gotten some of these secondary guys in there, you got Big Play Slay, you're going to get Mills. I think he's going to, like you said, there's going to be a little bit more vanilla. You're going to, the coverage is going to dictate the pass rush. How do you see this working out with, when you have a hard grade? Because now I think that you're not going to be able to just say, all right, we're going to just double Fletcher Cox. How do you see that playing?
Yeah, that's a big thing. And that was something that Jim Schwartz is constantly having to battle. How do I free up Fletcher Cox to get one-on-one with a guard or with a center? You saw it a lot of times where they would double mug the A-gap, right? They would spread out that defensive line. They bring Malcolm Jenkins and Nigel Bradham. They put him in the A-gap. That way that center can't slide. You know, one step by Nigel Bradham as a threat, as a blitzer, makes that center hesitate for a half a second. And that half a second, if Fletcher Cox can beat that guard, he's not there to help in time. So I think you are going to see a lot of that with Javon Hargrave. You put him at one tech, or you put him, you know, between a center and a guard. Now it's pick your poison. Who do you want your center to slide to? And if you can get that interior pressure, that really is going to help out your edge guys, because now you're pushing the pocket. There's nowhere for the quarterback to step up into, and that's going to lead for sacks for guys like Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett. Hopefully Jannard Avery proves that he was the right move as a future type move, and he can kind of get going. So I think it does impact everything. It has a huge ripple effect along with helping Fletcher Cox get those one-on-ones.
Speaking with Michael Kiss, Bleeding Green Nation. Michael, to move on from the X's and O's for a second and move on to kind of the storyline that has come out, do you believe that the Eagles are making personnel decisions based on the leadership ability of Carson Wentz?
You know, it's odd because there's this big push that's being called like Carson and the kids, right? So right. Out of one side of your mouth, you're saying you need these young guys that he was so effective with for the last 4 weeks of the regular season and began to grow with and trust and all of its lollipops and stuff. But on the other side of your mouth, you're saying, okay, Alshon Jeffrey is your guy, which comes with its own set of baggage. And then you're trying to sell us that everything is fine between them. And you've also got, you know, DeSean Jackson on the roster. And not that DeSean is a problem, but he's also a vet that isn't exactly soft-spoken. Mm-hmm. So this idea that you need potential new acquisitions at the wide receiver position to like pass this emotional intelligence personality test to see if you're a match with Carson Wentz. It's like more The Bachelor than anything. Carson doesn't need to personally give each of these guys a rose for the Eagles to go make a trade for DeAndre Hopkins or take a swing on a one-year deal prove it kind of thing for Rashad Perriman. They need to add weapons, period. So
right.
I get the idea of doing it for Carson, what the Seahawks did for Russell Wilson and making it his team, but they seem to be taking it too far, and they got to sit down, or Carson's got to sit them down, or they got to sit Carson down and figure this happy medium to this.
So you do believe it's factoring in?
I do believe it is, yeah, and I think it's weird. I think it should factor in. I think they should make this Carson's team, but the way they're doing it is either too extreme or they're doing it the wrong way for my taste. So me personally, like, I think there's a level at which that's acceptable and it's fine and it makes a ton of sense to me, but then there's a bridge too far, and I think that's what we're seeing right now. Now, how much you put into those words, we'll see. The actions will speak louder, and it's still March, so I get it. I'm not panicking yet. I'm not liking what they've done so far and how it sounds.
Do you think that there'll be another move before the draft?
I don't think there. I don't think there's going to be another big move or another big trade. Now, there is the thing with the draft where a lot of these guys don't have, like, you know, confirmed measurables and testing and medical rechecks, right? Like, you look at the wide receivers, like, LaVisca Chenault has medical questions. He could fall big time. He didn't really get to test. Like, he ran his 40, but he was banged up. A guy like Bryan Edwards from South Carolina probably would have ran 4.4, and he didn't get to test. He's a big dude. So they're not going to be able to do these things. Now, do you want to risk it and spend all those picks, or do you want to trade them for more known assets in this weird draft process that you're having to go through? So that's the big question for me. There's hope that they'll move some of those picks to kind of get a more known quantity than kind of take blind swings at things for the draft.
Michael, as far as shoring up this team, I mean, there's a lot of depth issues that they have, and I don't think they can address them all in the draft. And one of those positions is running back, and we've heard the name LeSean McCoy thrown out there again. Any chance on that, or do you see them getting another running back besides in the draft?
Yeah, it's weird because we want to get younger. This is Carson's team. We want to get younger. And then we're talking LeSean McCoy. I mean, a guy who was a healthy scratch by Andy Reid in the Super Bowl. And I think we can all can say that LeSean McCoy isn't near what he was in his prime. And really, you can get running backs just about anywhere. We saw Boston Scott be productive. He's a former undrafted or like a sixth or seventh round pick. They shipped a sixth round pick for Jordan Howard, and he was extremely productive in this offense. They got extreme production from Jordan Howard when he was healthy. Miles Sanders, and he was a second round pick. So that's three different guys that you don't have to spend a ton on. I really think you can find a running back just about anywhere. If your offensive line is right, the Eagles have the right offensive line, you can put it back in there, and he's going to thrive.
Speaking with Michael Kiss, Bleeding Green Nation. All right, when's the meeting happen when you guys approve or disapprove of Seamus Clancy's bracket here with, laughing already, of you got Reggie White, Chuck Bednarik, Brian Dawkins against Trey Thomas, by the way, in the first round.
That's ridiculous, man.
But whatever.
And then Nick Foles is the number one seed. What's going on here?
Yeah, I wanted to talk. This wasn't approved by anybody at BGN offices, what he did here. So we're gonna have to talk with him about that. We're obviously going to have a long discussion about this. We've got plenty of time on our hands, but I thought it was a great idea for Seamus to bring that up. And I was listening to him earlier. I love the depth that he went into it, talking about guys that have seen Chuck Bednarik live. It's pretty cool, and it's a fun exercise. But like I said, like, just completely unfair for Trey. He's gonna have to sit on the sidelines after a first round bounce. So not loving that part of it.
I'll tell you this much. My favorite line that he gave us was, I never saw Chuck Bednarik, but I talked to a guy who served in Korea, and he said that Chuck Bednarik was the guy that needed to be a number one seed. Although you should know that a two-time world champion, because he was also on the 49 team his rookie year, and then he also won the championship in 1960 as well. But Dawkins goes number one there as a number one seed. Nick Foles is the number one. Now, the number two seed here, which I've overlooked, in that same region, the Super Bowl champion region, Carson Wentz number two to Nick Foles.
Mm. Yeah, that's headed for a showdown that I'm not necessarily in love with. Not only that, Carson Wentz is probably going to have to go up against Fletcher Cox right away, and that could get real interesting. Nick Foles against Nelson Agholor, that's the first matchup that he has to go up against. So Foles getting it easy out of the gate, that could lead to another quarterback controversy. I mean, I think we're going to get to the point in the offseason, if like the football season is delayed, we're going to get to the point where we're going to be running out of stories. We're going to be talking about bringing Nick Foles back from Chicago somehow. That's just
again,
it's just bound to happen.
You know what else we'll talk about? Tiger King. Did you watch it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm in the Tampa Bay area. That's where I live. I've been to Big Cat Rescue on a feeding tour, and I've seen them, you know, munch on those bunnies. It was a very interesting experience. But yeah, being here after seeing that, like, I'm constantly aware of like where the meat grinders are. You know, checking Carol Baskin's social media, making sure that she's not in the area. So yeah, very very hyper aware of what's going on with Tiger King.
I'm dying to know what people are saying about that. If you're in that area, I forgot you're down in that area proper. What are people saying about the Carol Baskin lady and the whole documentary?
Yeah, there's been a big anti-Carol Baskin type movement down here. And like Big Cat Rescue has been pretty popular down here, but I think with the way that it was presented on Netflix, which she obviously has a problem with, it hasn't been great for her brand because there aren't any good people in that documentary, like from my eyes. She comes across terrible. Like when she said, I can't even fit his hand through a meat grinder. I'm thinking she put his hand through a meat grinder, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Pouring, sardine oil on somebody's shoes and then make a cat want to eat you? I'm like,
she knew what to do.
She
knows exactly what she's doing. So I'm keeping my head on a swivel down here while I'm surrounded by Florida men during a quarantine that think it's a good idea to go to the beach. And then I got this old big cat thing to worry about.
The last thing I'll just say is, it seems like the only difference between Carol Baskin and the Joe Exotic guy is that she not only possibly murdered her first husband, but also she doesn't let people take pictures with the cats. That's like the only difference, it seemed like. Did I miss something? Okay.
No, I mean, she keeps it all in. She keeps it all in, but you could tell it's shooting out of her eyes.
So take from this conversation that we just had with our friend Michael Kiss. One, the Eagles are allowing Carson Wentz's leadership abilities make decisions for their front office. Two, Carol Baskin killed her first husband, or second husband, actually. So there we go. Michael Kiss, thank you so much. Allegedly.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Mike,
thanks, Mike.
Bleeding Green Nation always does one heck of a job, that's for sure. Yeah. And she's also talking about, like,